then one will not have the desire to draw an invidious comparison between the scientist and the poet, between the physicist and the priest. They each help us cope with our environment in one way or another. There's no need for such invidious distinctions. You can't dispense with any of them. And obviously, this is true of the human sciences, of the arts, right? It is not the case that science is true and painting and literature are something else. No, that too is a way of helping us interact with our world, with our environment. And therefore, we should think of beliefs not as metaphysical entities that mirror, but simply as habits of action. They're encoded ways of talking about our dispositions to behavior. Right? So, rather than think of a set of beliefs as some thing, intentional meaning between my ears, think of it as an encoding of a particular set of behaviors that can be predicted if one believes true that sentence or that belief. Habits of action. Rorty also argues for something he calls anti-realism. Now, don't confuse this with what Nelson Goodman calls irrealism, the view that there are many worlds as there are as ways of world-making. What Rorty argues is, and I think quite sharply, is that the notion of a final and fixed reality, which we can compare to our conceptual scheme, has literally this much, which is to say zero, explanatory power. Right? There is no way to actually ever compare your conceptual scheme to a fixed and final world because you always experience the world under some particular paradigm or conceptual scheme. We saw this with both Kuhn and Quine. So the point is that world, which our theories must correspond to, is a world well lost. It's a world which has no explanatory function. It's simply a form of metaphysical bootstrapping, of giving ourselves a pat on the back, oh yes, we know we're right. When in fact, you know you're right simply if it functions. If it functions better than previous beliefs. So, rather than try to offer epistemological grounds or foundations for our beliefs, little p philosophy should instead try to show how our various descriptions, actions, behaviors, institutions, practices hang together in the broadest and loosest sense of the term. Should be a reconstruction of more or less what's our form of life. How does A relate to B? How does our poetry relate to our physics? How does our politics relate to our game playing? How does our economy relate to our sporting events? Whereas philosophy conceives of high cultural inquiry as converging on the truth, that's capital P philosophy, little p philosophy prefers to see such discourse not as a debate which leads towards the truth, but as a conversation whose sole purpose is to keep the conversation itself going. There will be no final answers, nor should we even want them. The point is just to keep talking. That's the end in itself. Right? It's carried on for its own sake. In fact, he says that's what we should try to do, is turn Western culture from a debate where we try to get to the bottom and answer questions into nothing more than a conversation which remains open and keeps moving forward. That's what's most valuable of in the West. Such a post-philosophic foundational little p philosophy would eschew systematic theory in favor of what we might call, and I have called, edifying discourses. Examples: Hegelian historicism, Nietzschean self-creation, Heidegger's talk of the historically contingent nature of language. All of these, he says, are really not very systematic views at all. They're edifying. They give us a different angle, a different perspective, a different view of things. They offer us wisdom as opposed to, quote, theory. I want to turn finally to his last text, most recent text of, I think, about 2 years ago, called Contingency, Irony, and Solidarity. In here, this text, Rorty tries to show how his own edifying